News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take, Tuesday edition of the program. Thanks for tuning in. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you for this edition of the show. This is the show where we have more in-depth conversations about things that you may have heard about on WSJM News as of late. If it's been in our news coverage, it'll come up on Our Take, but in an extended, more in-depth fashion, we have longer conversations with the individuals who are in the know or who are making things happen here in Michigan's Great Southwest. Coming up on today's show, we have multiple interesting topics to discuss. First of all, we will talk with the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission about Napier Avenue. On Friday night, a man was struck by a vehicle and killed walking on Napier. There are no sidewalks there, and we've seen a whole lot of discussion on social media since then. I know our story about it got a whole lot of comments from people saying, why in the world are there no sidewalks on Napier Avenue? This is something I've wondered about many times over the past 10 years or so, and I have spoken with different municipal planners about it multiple times, but this week I caught up with John Eaglehoff. He is the director of the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission, and he had some updates for me regarding Napier. Point is, Napier Avenue in Benton Township and St. Joe Township, maybe Benton Harbor for parts of it, could get sidewalks in 2019. We will learn about that on today's program. We will also talk with the Michigan League for Public Policy about the state's unemployment insurance system. They recently did a survey, a study on the unemployment systems in various states within this region and found Michigan has the worst unemployment system. We'll check in with them and find out why that is and what they think should be done to improve it. And also on today's program, we'll talk with someone from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, the DNR, about snowmobiling and you, things snowmobilers must remember this time of year when they're riding around on their snowmobiles. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at WSJM.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Time for a quick break. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. Now, for this segment of the show, I thought we'd check in with the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission. They are an organization that handles things like road development, infrastructure, and parks development, natural resources development, all throughout Michigan's Great Southwest. They work with every municipality, really, in this region. And I have had a conversation with the director of the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission about Napier Avenue, because on Friday night, a man was struck and killed while walking on Napier. A pedestrian was struck by a vehicle. And so there's been a lot of questions about why there are no sidewalks for Napier Avenue. Turns out there could be some in the near future or the not too distant future. I caught up with John Eaglehoff, director of the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission, to talk about this. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, John, you and I were just talking and you were telling me that there have been talks about getting sidewalks for Napier Avenue between the St. Joe River and I-94, correct?
Yes. And, you know, we had seen the need for that for a while, and as it turns out, the Road Commission, now the Road Department, asked that section of the roadway, the request extends beyond the I-94 on-ramp, but they're going to repave that section of Napier in two sections, in a piece of it in 19 and another piece of it in 20.
Okay.
So we knew that the timing was important. If that corridor was to be rethought, this was our moment to do that.
So, I mean, I imagine for years you've probably heard questions about why there's no sidewalks over there, right?
Well, sure. Yeah, and we as planners kind of look at that corridor and know it's problematic, just knowing the data, the danger. And just, it doesn't pass the eye test either.
So what is the problem? Why haven't there been any sidewalks there thus far?
you know, this is the business of the jurisdictions along that corridor. They decide whether it's a kind of investment that's appropriate to make, and then it's really not just an infrastructure investment, it's a management and maintenance investment over time. So they recognize that. They know that, you know, if and when those sidewalks would go in, then it would be a question of who's going to shovel those walks, and over time, you know, how much is that investment going to cost to manage and maintain.
So I imagine if there were sidewalks, maintenance would be the responsibility of Benton Township and St. Joe Township?
Yes. There's a bit of, I think, Benton Harbor City in there, too.
And so the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission has been doing a study on this corridor, Napier Avenue.
Well, no, we've really just gotten started on it. We have a contractor that's doing the work, and we're managing the work because it's the work that we've done on it, it's kind of, it gets to a certain point where it's time to call in the national experts. And these folks are really good at what they do. We did a large-scale request for proposals, and this organization came through impressively. We have a committee that's made up of individuals from the private sector and the public sector, all the jurisdictions that the corridor goes through, the Road Commission, and various other special interest groups that are all participating in this study. So we're kind of at this point now where the contractor has done a fair amount of the existing conditions survey work. I don't necessarily mean survey with a transect and, you know, getting all that, but I mean they are collecting data on right-of-way width. They've done aerial flyovers. They have, you know, so they're building this existing conditions information. Part of the reason why sidewalks are a challenge is because it happens to be a rather narrow right-of-way in certain areas. So the question is kind of, how do you move as much traffic as you have through that corridor? And if you're going to save right-of-way somehow or reuse it in some other way, how do you reduce the number of lanes and still push the amount of traffic through that corridor? So the problem sometimes is there even room for sidewalks? And it's a kind of a value judgment you have to make.
So if sidewalks were built on Napier, would they have to be in a space that is currently roadway? Is there even a place off to the side where they could be?
Yes, if you go curb to curb, I don't have the data in front of me. That's one of the great advantages of the study that we're doing, is we'll be able to resolve questions like that. But if you go down that corridor and look at where from edge of curb to edge of curb, and you look at where the utility poles are, you can see that it's likely the right-of-way is, there's barely any right-of-way beyond where the edge of curb is. So we're talking very minimal amounts of public right-of-way that's available.
I mean, I do know there are areas where you walk and you're practically in someone's front yard if you're standing on the curb.
Yeah, sure. So you look at those desire paths that grow up outside of the curb and on grass or whatever it is, and you can see those paths where people have no choice but to walk. And you know, my guess is that oftentimes those are probably on private property.
And so the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission and the townships and the road department, now you have been cognizant for a while that it would be nice if there were sidewalks there.
There is no question that, we planners want to see all modes accommodated in that corridor. So it's not just pedestrians, it's also cyclists. It's people who are, you know, who have to use public transportation, and a bus has trouble finding a place to come pick them up. People in motorized scooters and wheelchairs and all sorts of folks that would want to use that corridor but are putting their, really, as we found out over the weekend, putting their lives in danger. You know, these are the users we want to accommodate, not just vehicles.
Is there,
so? Yes. So the Planning Commission, that's what planners do. They look at infrastructure and investment, and they try to think about ways to maximize that investment so all users can be accommodated.
Are you optimistic that could happen?
Of course I am. That's why we do what we do. You know, we saw this danger before this weekend's tragedy. We've known this is a dangerous place. We knew we had to try to do something about it. Not all the participants are, you know, on the same page, but that's what these processes are about, is you walk through it together and you find where compromise is and you try to make things better. It's not as if, you know, one point of view is going to get everything they want. This is an interesting challenge in collaboration and compromise, but that's the way it works. But we will apply the very best possible thinking that could be applied to this. It's the right moment to do it. We've got a really good chance to make a difference here.
Now, if we're looking at timetables, okay, let's say what's being done right now could result in the addition of sidewalks over there. So best case scenario, when can we possibly see something like that if it does happen?
Well, what's going to happen is that corridor is going to be repaved. So if this study is completed as it should be in sometime in 18, in 2019, the first phase of the paving happens. This is the planning, the arc, the sort of planning horizon that typically happens is we'd be looking at sometime within the decade. But because of the need for that to be repaved anyway, because the road is in such poor condition, mm-hmm. the funds are available, the approvals have been given, it is not impossible that the findings of this study, the agreement of the communities involved, the agreement of the road commission, all those things happen, and by 19, you've got a thoroughly reimagined corridor on Napier.
Great. Well, I hope that we could see that in 2019. I have to drive down Napier Avenue every day, and sometimes, you know, you see a pedestrian, and you have to move over, get out of the way quickly. Otherwise, you risk hitting the person.
Well, yeah. I mean, our hearts are heavy here. The lost his life on Friday, it was a classmate of one of my sons. And, you know, it was a profound experience for us. And then, really, the very next day, I, like you, was driving that corridor, and I had to do exactly what you just described. I had to drive carefully around pedestrians that were walking inside the right of way, inside the traffic lanes. So it's frightening. It's awful. I feel for anyone who has to do that because they don't do it because they want to. They have little choice but to do it. And we really need to find something better.
All right. That was John Eaglehoff, director of the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission, telling us, you know, they're doing a study right now on Napier Avenue, the whole corridor from the St. Joe River over to I-94 in St. Joe Benton Township and Benton Harbor. And, you know, Friday's incident in which an individual was struck and killed walking on along the road has brought up renewed calls for there to be sidewalks over there, and that could happen conceivably. They're planning to repave Napier anyway in 2019, so if it happens, it could be then. There are many complicated maintenance issues to consider. The townships and possibly the city would be responsible for keeping the sidewalk clear of snow, for example, and I know that when it snows, the sidewalks are usually the last thing that gets cleared. So you'd probably still see pedestrians in the road in those cases. But we could certainly use sidewalks. Now, if you drive up and down there, you may notice a lot of places, you know, there's a parking lot right there, just a foot away or so from the road itself. So it is a challenge. But it's something that they're looking at. Southwest Michigan Planning Commission and other entities are looking at as a scheduled repaving of Napier is set for 2019. I appreciate John's time talking about that issue with us. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. And right now we'll take a break. When we come back, we will chat with the Michigan League for Public Policy about the state's unemployment insurance system. The league says Michigan has a lousy unemployment system. We'll find out why they believe that to be the case. If you'd like to weigh in on something that we've discussed on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at WSJM.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9. WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the show. I'm the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. The governor, Rick Snyder, is going to give his State of the State address tonight. And it will be his final State of the State because this is Governor Rick Snyder's final year in office. And after the speech tonight, I'll be talking with a couple of our lawmakers from Southwest Michigan. I'm supposed to talk with State Senator John Prose and Representative Kim Lasada to get their reactions to the governor's address tonight. So we'll have that tomorrow morning on WSJM News. And in the recent days, a couple of our lawmakers have sent out their predictions or their wish lists, if you will, of things that they hope to hear the governor talk about tonight at the State of the State. And one of them is State Representative Kim Lasada, Bainbridge Township. She was telling us she's hoping to hear Governor Rick Snyder in this State of the State address the issue of sexual assaults on college campuses. She says that she expects some hearings to be held on the issue in the coming year. Lasada's on a higher education committee. She wants to talk about how the state can get colleges to take the issue of these assaults more seriously.
As a higher ed chair, we will be looking at some type of language, maybe to strengthen the Title IX requirements that we see in the state of Michigan, and looking at maybe other ways to protect our students.
Kim Lasada has called for the president of Michigan State University to consider resigning over the Dr. Larry Nassar situation. She also says that she would like to hear the governor address the needs of first responders tonight.
We need to make sure that our first responders are protected, whether it's their salaries, their retirements, their safety, that they're getting the tools, education they need to continue to protect all of us.
So that's State Representative Kim Lasada with a sort of a wish list of what she would like to hear the governor talk about tonight. State Representative Mary Whiteford, meanwhile, of Casco Township, says that she's hoping to hear the governor address the issue of expanding broadband internet to rural areas.
This is a free market issue, broadband, but honestly, it's become such an incredibly important part of our lives for businesses, for people to work from their homes, for students to get their homework done versus mom and dad driving over to the local Burger King so that they can have a hotspot and get internet access to do their homework.
So that's State Representative Mary Whiteford out of Casco Township, the South Haven area. She says she knows there are many areas in this state woefully in need of proper utilities, and that means broadband.
I've got an area with 200 homes just south of Holland. They have absolutely zero connectivity. So what are we going to do to try to help figure that out? I'm looking forward to the governor saying, hey, rural broadband is infrastructure, and let's make sure that we're doing something to support the expansion for businesses and homes in our state and in my district.
That's a couple of Southwest Michigan lawmakers with what they would like to hear the governor address tonight in his State of the State. It'll be his final State of the State. I hope he keeps it short. We will be broadcasting it here on WSJM tonight. 7 o'clock is when the speech is supposed to start, about around there. And in the morning, we'll have some reactions from a couple of our state lawmakers as well. So that's tonight, State of the State, 7 p.m. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and right now it's time to welcome our second guest of the program, and that is Peter Ruark. He is a policy analyst with the Michigan League for Public Policy. The League recently released a report that identified Michigan's unemployment insurance system as the worst unemployment system in the Great Lakes region, and he has a list of things that he thinks could be done to the unemployment system here in Michigan to make it better. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Peter. So the Michigan League for Public Policy has released a report saying Michigan needs to make some improvements to its unemployment insurance system. Tell us, what is the problem with the system here in our state?
Well, what we did was we compared Michigan's unemployment insurance system to that of its neighboring states. And among the upper Midwest states, Michigan pays the lowest maximum benefit. And its average weekly benefit is the lowest percentage of the state average weekly wage. So we pay the lowest benefits. There are fewer unemployed people in Michigan as a percentage covered by unemployment insurance than there are in other states. So we cover the lowest percentage of workers. We provide the fewest weeks of benefits. All other states in the Midwest have a 26-week maximum for receiving unemployment insurance, and Michigan's is only 20 weeks. So for the long-term unemployed in areas that have been hit really hard with job closings and layoffs and things like that, we don't provide unemployment insurance benefits for very long compared with other states around us. And then finally, we just overall spend the least among Midwest states relative to the number of unemployed workers. We don't make an investment as a state in helping to address the problem of unemployment or helping workers who have been laid off or can't find jobs.
So the limit here in Michigan is 20 weeks?
Yes.
And other states offer up to 26?
Yeah, well, all other Midwest states, our neighboring states, all of them offer 26. And that used to be the norm. Michigan did something pretty radical and unheard of several years ago. Michigan was the first state to actually cut the maximum number of weeks that an unemployed worker could get unemployment insurance as they look for work. No other state had done that. And what's really ironic about that is Michigan did that while the country was in the midst of a very bad recession and while Michigan had one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. So we were the last state that should have even thought about cutting unemployment insurance weeks.
So what sorts of problems are these inadequacies causing for people who are unemployed?
Well, if you are a lower-paid worker, it's going to be very difficult for you to receive unemployment insurance. We require a very high minimum wage level for people to be eligible for unemployment insurance. So if you're, say, a fast food worker or retail worker who is working, you know, minimum wage or even quite a bit over minimum wage, you get laid off, you can't find work, you're not going to be able to get unemployment insurance. So a lot of the workers that really need it are not getting it. That's one problem. And then the benefits themselves. Our maximum benefit is $362 a week. That's the maximum. It's been that level since 2002, even though wages have gone up, even though inflation has made, you know, prices go up. So we need to adjust that so that that maximum level can keep up with wages, because even if you are getting unemployment insurance, it's simply not paying enough for many families.
All right. Now, one of the things mentioned in your study is that the state legislature has at least done something to help those who were affected by possible fraud in the unemployment system.
Yes. Actually, victims of falsely being accused of unemployment fraud.
So do some of these cases of false accusations of fraud with unemployment involve identity theft? And if so, how common is that?
It looks like it was. When they looked into why so many people were being falsely accused of fraud, they did find that identity theft was the cause of some of that. But a lot of it was simply caused by a computerized system that was, you know, triggering fraud determinations when it should not have been. So, for example, a well-meaning mistake in paperwork could trigger a fraud accusation. But identity theft was part of it, and the problem is that the system, as it was set up, if somebody believed they were a victim of identity theft or for whatever reason, you know, believed that they were wrongly accused of fraud, they did not really have recourse to contest that fraud determination. And so that law package, that bill package that was passed and signed by the governor, takes extra steps to try to prevent identity theft, but it also gives a lot more options to people who feel they have been wrongly accused of fraud. And it also put into law that fraud determinations cannot be decided by a computer. It has to have some human involvement, and the whole system has to be improved, and this fraud bill package did that.
Okay, so the state legislature at least has handled the whole fraud issue correctly.
Yes, we are very happy with how this played out. Representative Graves, Representative Joseph Graves in the legislature, pulled together a team of business groups, labor groups, and legal aid lawyers that had actually helped people that had been wrongly accused of fraud, and in some cases those people had, you know, had to file bankruptcy, had their houses foreclosed, got bad credit. Representative Graves pulled together that team of experts. They proposed a set of changes, and various legislators, you know, put those changes into bills that they proposed, and to their great credit, the entire Michigan Senate and the entire Michigan House voted unanimously to pass those fixes to the system. So we are very happy with how this played out with, you know, solving the problem of false fraud determinations.
And there are some other areas, though, where you would like to see improvements made to the system to better help the workers.
Yes, and we have been pushing for that for many years. So, you know, last year we had to put out a really bad fire, so to speak, and fix that false fraud problem. But now that that's been fixed, we need to go back to discussing how can we make our unemployment insurance system more effective in helping workers who need the unemployment insurance.
We're talking with Peter Ruark with the Michigan League for Public Policy about inadequacies in the state unemployment system. Anything else you'd like to add, Peter?
I would just add that improving our unemployment insurance, helping more workers get unemployment insurance, and updating the benefit levels so that they get more per week for unemployment insurance as they look for work, that's good for workers and their families, but that's also good for the Michigan economy. Because when a worker gets unemployed, obviously they're going to spend less, you know, at local stores, gas stations, you know, barber shops, things like that. When they receive unemployment insurance, they can continue to support those local businesses, and you know, then we don't see businesses having to close their doors just because of a layoff in the community. So it's good insurance for businesses and the economy, as well as for workers and their families.
All right, that was Peter Ruark, Michigan League for Public Policy, talking with us about some improvements that the organization would like to see made to Michigan's unemployment insurance system. They say that benefits run out too quickly. They say not enough workers qualify for those benefits. They do think, though, that the legislature properly handled the fraud situation that they were dealing with people all over the state being accused of ripping off the unemployment system when, in fact, they had not. Computer was initially just making that determination, and I know of some instances in which individuals had their wages garnished because they were falsely accused by a computer of ripping off the unemployment system. At least the legislature fixed that situation, but still a few things that the Michigan League for Public Policy would like to see improved there. I appreciate Peter's time. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and right now we'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources about snowmobiling. You know, I woke up today to fresh snow on the ground, as many of us did. The DNR wants to make sure everyone handles snowmobiling in the most safe way. way possible. If you'd like to weigh in on something that we've discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Tuesday edition of the program. I'm the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is, of course, the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about recently on WSJM News. If it's been in WSJM's news coverage, it'll probably show up in Our Take in a more extended fashion. We have longer conversations with folks who are in the know or making things happen here around Michigan's Great Southwest, or just around the entire state, around the nation sometimes. So far in today's program, we talked about Napier Avenue with the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission. There's a repaving project planned for Napier, as it turns out, for 2019. And it's possible Napier could wind up getting sidewalks finally as part of that project. We won't know for a while now, but the Southwest Michigan Planning Commission is currently conducting a study on the whole Napier corridor. In a few months, by the end of the year, we should find out more about that. We also talked with the Michigan League for Public Policy about things that it believes should be done to fix Michigan's unemployment system. A number of improvements are necessary, according to the league. Right now, for this segment of the show, our final guest, I thought, would be the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. I have chatted with the representative of the DNR about snowmobile safety and you. What the DNR wants you to know, to not only be safe on snowmobiles, but also not violate the law. I talked to the DNR's Tom Wandless about this. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Tom. So you are speaking on behalf of the DNR, which manages a whole lot of the snowmobile trails around Michigan. So from your perspective with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, what are some of the most common mistakes that people make when snowmobiling?
First and foremost, operating too fast. Another one would be the use of illegal drugs or alcohol. Those are probably two of the biggest. When it comes to operating too fast, there's a lot that goes with that, obviously, because you've got people who are operating snowmobiles beyond their limitations or beyond the snowmobile's limitations. Mm-hmm. Who are unfamiliar with their terrain, so you know the terrain that they're operating on, or for the conditions, for the lighting, you know, whether it's daytime, nighttime. Mm-hmm. So you know, the operating too fast, there's a lot of things that goes into that that help create that unsafe mm-hmm. condition.
Okay, are there age guidelines to follow with these machines?
You can start operating a snowmobile at any age. However, with our youth, there are definitely some restrictions with our youth, and it gets kind of complex. And if you want me to go through that, I can try my best to go through that for you.
Sure, go for it.
Okay, so if you are under the age of 12 and you want to operate a snowmobile, you can do so. However, you cannot cross roads. You can't operate by yourself. You need to have adult supervision with you. Mm-hmm. In Michigan, we offer snowmobile safety, which allows you to be able to get a snowmobile safety certificate. And that snowmobile safety certificate is designed for individuals who are 12 years of age and less than 17. And what that allows them to do is it allows them to operate a snowmobile without the adult supervision, and it allows them to operate across roadways. Not down roadways. Now, we're talking about crossing the roadway. If the trail that they're on goes from one side of the road to the other, they would not need adult supervision to be able to do that if they had a safety certificate in their possession. And then once an individual, as of right now, reaches the age of 17, the safety certificate, it's just the certificate is designed for youthful operators between the ages of 12 and 16. And I guess here's a point, too, about that snowmobile, because we would encourage anybody to take, and all snowmobilers, to take a snowmobile safety course. One thing that I have learned is that some insurance companies, if you insure your snowmobiles, if you show them that the registered owner has taken snowmobile safety, sometimes you do get a discount on your snowmobile insurance.
All right, something else I've been told by the Coast Guard is don't even bother going out on ice at all in the winter. I imagine it's not the best idea to take a snowmobile out on the ice. Seems like a good way to drown.
There's never really a great time to operate a snowmobile on the ice because you never know what the ice conditions are from one area of the frozen surface to another. There's so many factors that go into ice, the making of ice and the strength of the ice. Ice is very unpredictable. So, yeah, we would encourage people to stay off of it. Obviously, we had a real cold snap here for the last couple of weeks. It's been real, real cold. A lot of ice was made. However, for the last couple of days and the next few more days, temperatures are going to be above freezing. That's going to create some problems and some unsafe conditions if you're going to operate on the frozen surface of public bodies of water.
We're talking with Michigan Department of Natural Resources Law Enforcement Division Lieutenant Tom Wandless about how to safely operate a snowmobile this time of year. Any other safety tips you want to get out there, Tom?
For operating, make sure that your snowmobile is in good working order. Make sure that your headlights and your taillights are functioning and are cleaned off. And when you're out riding on the trails, stop every once in a while safely and make sure that you wipe the lens of your snowmobile headlight and taillight off. Another big thing is trespassing. Stay on the trails. Stay on the designated trails. Just because there's a fresh track going somewhere doesn't necessarily mean that it's legal to operate. Us establishing our trail system in Michigan is that a lot of our trails are on private land, and we get leases and agreements with these private owners. And one of the things that can ruin that real bad, or I shouldn't say real bad, but one of the things that can really ruin that is trespassing, where people are going off the trails, where people are stopping and littering. Those are things that can really screw up our trail system in Michigan.
All right, that was Tom Wandless, Law Enforcement Division of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Lieutenant, talking with us about how to safely operate a snowmobile. He ended on a note there. Don't litter the trails. Make sure you know where you are as well. If you don't know whose property you're on, you're probably not supposed to be there. And of course, don't take a snowmobile out on ice unless you want to drown. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take, and that does it for today's edition of the program. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will learn a little bit about this Michigan State Attorney General's OK to Say tip line and how it applies to local schools. We will also talk with the Michigan Department of Transportation on tomorrow's program to learn more about their latest technological innovations when it comes to winter road maintenance. And we'll get a recap of Governor Rick Snyder's State of the State speech. Remember, that is tonight, 7 p.m. Be there or be square. It will air on this here station, 94.9 WSJM FM. And we'll talk with a couple of Michigan state lawmakers tonight after the speech. You'll hear that in the morning on WSJM News. If you'd like to weigh in on something that we've discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at WSJM.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for another edition of the program. I have been your host today. My name is Andrew Green, and you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Town Crier Wire?
Town Crier Wire.
Town Crier Wire!